It is Thursday, January 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump accuses the Palestinians of disrespecting the United States. Tensions rise between the U.S. and Turkey over an account of a phone call between the two countries' leaders. And rapper Eminem releases a new single featuring a duet with singer Ed Sheeran. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump accused the Palestinians Thursday of disrespecting the U.S. by refusing to meet with Vice President Mike Pence during his recent visit to the Middle East. Trump spoke after meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss mountain resort of Davos.
When they disrespected us a week ago by not allowing our great Vice President to see them, and we give them hundreds of millions of dollars in aid and support, tremendous numbers, numbers that nobody understands. That money is on the table, and that money is not going to them unless they sit down and negotiate peace.
Reporter Henry Ridgewell in London describes to me President Trump's comments about the Palestinians.
Within hours of President Trump stepping off the Marine One helicopter that took him from Zurich Airport to the resort of Davos, he used his trademark straight-talking diplomacy in that meeting in front of the cameras with Benjamin Netanyahu. He said that he questioned whether the peace talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians would ever resume, and basically blamed the Palestinians for that state of affairs. And as you say, he accused the Palestinians of disrespecting America by refusing to meet with Mike Pence when he visited the region. And he also talked again about the millions, he said billions of dollars, that America gives to the Palestinians every year, and stated very blankly that that money was on the table, as he put it, and would not be given to the Palestinians unless they sit down and hold talks with Israel, who he said are willing to make peace. So some of the strongest words we've seen yet. Obviously, we know that Donald Trump has a close relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu, but I think this is the most explicit threat yet the president has made to the Palestinians, flatly threatening to withdraw the aid money unless they do sit down to talk. So already just a few hours into Mr. Trump's arrival at Davos, he's already causing diplomatic waves.
Mr. Trump also reiterated saying that the United States would open what he called a small embassy in Jerusalem.
That's right. He said those plans were years ahead of schedule, that the plans were already underway to have some kind of embassy, some kind of facility open in Jerusalem at some point next year in 2019. And that, of course, is the root of the problems that the Palestinians have, the reason why they refuse to meet Vice President Pence on his visit to the region is because of President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which the Palestinians effectively believe that is a U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And of course, it is the fate of Jerusalem that is one of the major sticking points of the peace talks, who will claim the city as their capital. The purported solution has always been to try to divide the capital or to have it as a shared capital, but that point has never been got over in the peace talks, and so that is at the root of the Palestinians' refusal to meet Mike Pence.
Henry Ridgewell reporting from London. Well, joining me on the line is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, there's a rather grim story. I don't know to the degree that you've been covering it. This involves a physician in Michigan, Dr. Larry Nassar. He was convicted of many instances of sexual abuse when he was not just a physician working at Michigan State, but also working for the U.S. gymnastics team, the U.S. Olympic women's gymnastics team. And he has been sentenced. The fallout has now reached to the MSU president, Lou Anne Simon, who has stepped down from her role as president. But the anger really only seems to be growing out there. The hashtag Larry Nassar is really it's fascinating to read. I'm just going to go through a couple of these here. One, first off, this is Regina Vadiyatham, who is a BBC reporter. She tweets out here, "While in the toilets, I heard a woman sobbing uncontrollably in the stall next to me. I asked if she was okay. She told me she testified earlier. Don't forget how hard it must be for these young women not only to relive their ordeal, but to do so in front of their abuser." Of course, one of the aspects of the sentencing portion of this trial of Dr. Larry Nassar was the judge allowed victims to come forward and address the court and, you know, in so doing, address Dr. Nassar himself. And it's really been a grim parade. The numbers are unbelievable. Here's Ryan Schilling. Larry Nassar is now the most prolific child molester in American history. He's currently, the number for Nassar now exceeds 180. It's impossible to believe, but 180 young women have come forward and said that he sexually abused them. This is Caitlin Flynn, also herself a journalist. Never forget that U.S. Gymnastics allowed Larry Nassar to, quote, treat their athletes for 2 years while he was under criminal investigation. He was actually under investigation for alleged sexual harassment, and U.S. Gymnastics kept him on the staff and allowed him to continue, examining or working with the young athletes. So anger is really now pointing at the U.S. gymnastics team and the U.S. Olympic Committee. I mean, people are very angry. You can understand why. And they're really asking for heads to roll, you know, all the way up to, you know, the head of U.S. Olympic Committee. So it's a grim read, but it's fascinating, and it's got a lot of people talking out there.
It certainly has got a lot of comment. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The United States rejects a claim that a drone hit a refugee camp in Pakistan. President Trump says he's willing to answer the special counsel's questions about looking into Russian interference under oath. A New York City street will be named after a hero soldier who died in a recent fire. And North and South Korea form a first-ever joint Olympic team. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The smartphone has become a must-have accessory for a number of teenagers around the world. Whether it's texting, engaging in social media, or playing games, teens devour a lot of screen time. A new study from San Diego State University and the University of Georgia suggests that teens who spend a lot of time with their devices aren't as happy as those who engage in more non-screen activities like sports or actual face-to-face social interaction. The researchers say they found teens who used digital media devices for less than an hour a day were the happiest, but the degree of unhappiness rose steadily as they increased their screen time. But the researchers also found that completely avoiding these devices doesn't necessarily lead to happiness either. Study lead author Jean Twenge from San Diego State University suggests teens spend no more than 2 hours a day on digital media. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Turkish and U.S. tensions rise over a dispute about an account of a phone call between the leaders of the two countries. Former U.S. diplomat Bill Richardson has resigned his position as a member of the International Advisory Board for the Committee for Implementation of Recommendations on the Rakhine State in Myanmar, also known as Burma. The panel was formed last year to act on the work of a commission led by former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to address the violence in western Rakhine State. Richardson said in part what precipitated his action was an argument he got into with state counselor and de facto Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi about two Reuters journalists on trial for allegedly violating the Official Secrets Act.
She believes there's a concerted international effort against Myanmar. and I believe she is wrong. She blames all the problems that Myanmar is having on the international media, on the UN, on human rights groups, on other governments. And I think this is caused by the bubble that is around her, by individuals that are not giving her frank advice. I also disagree with the direction the chairman, Surikyat, wants to take the advisory board. There's no agenda. There's no plan to address some of the issues relating to safety, to citizenship. I don't want to be part of a whitewash, and I felt it's best that I resign immediately.
Richardson said he was unhappy and distressed by the explosive reaction from Aung San Suu Kyi, who said the case of the journalists was not part of the board's charter. The U.S. called Richardson's action a cause for concern. Richardson's departure came a day after Bangladesh and Myanmar failed to meet a deadline to begin the repatriation of nearly 700,000 Rohingya Muslims who fled a military crackdown last year in Rakhine. Monique Skidmore, Deputy Vice Chancellor of the University of Tasmania in Australia, has long followed Myanmar closely. She tells International Edition's Victor Beattie she's not surprised at Richardson's decision.
I am surprised that Aung San Suu Kyi is seeking to so narrowly implement or interpret the recommendation of former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan's report on the causes and changes required to bring back transparency and security in Rakhine State.
Are you saying she's not fully embracing those recommendations?
The committee itself hasn't made any recommendations as to how to implement the former report, but clearly Aung San Suu Kyi is trying to deal with it in a logistical way, in a way that has to do with aid, rather than moving into any of the areas that include national security. And that's going, and really that means that that Governor Bill Richardson may be right. This may end up being a whitewash if it continues to not tackle the underlying causes, as Kofi Annan very clearly spelled out, that are leading the Rohingya to leave in such numbers.
Richardson said Aung San Suu Kyi lacks moral leadership. Is that a surprising statement?
No, it's not a surprising statement. I suppose it's surprising to all of us who've followed Myanmar for so many years that Aung San Suu Kyi has taken such a weak role in this, that this is not an issue that she has ever spoken strongly about. Even when she accepted her Nobel Peace Prize, she simply spoke about the Rohingya as a communal unrest. She's never shown leadership on this issue. And whilst we all understand the complexities of the emerging transition to democracy, the rise of Buddhist fundamentalism, the importance and the critical role that the military still has under the constitution, there still truly has been a complicity by Aung San Suu Kyi, which of course is disappointing for everyone who's ever known her.
What does his resignation from this board do to its final report?
It won't do anything at the moment other than further diminish its credibility. We need to see if any other members resign, and we need to see if any recommendations are implemented from Kofi Annan's report. Otherwise, it will be a whitewash. Hopefully, what's happened with Governor Bill Richardson resigning is that he's shining the spotlight back on Aung San Suu Kyi, increasing the pressure, and further increased pressure internationally can only be a good thing for the people of Rakhine State.
Monique Skidmore has little faith the proposed repatriation of Rohingyas back to Myanmar will take place, since many are still awaiting a chance to return from previous repatriation programs. She said there's no evidence villages destroyed in the crackdown are being rebuilt, enough transition camps set up, and changes to the regulations governing the Muslim minority, such as citizenship, freedom of movement, employment, and marriage, will be made. U.S.-Turkish relations have suffered another blow, with Ankara disputing Washington's version of a telephone call Wednesday between the U.S. and Turkish presidents. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the call was aimed at diffusing tensions over Turkish-led forces' intervention in Syria.
Ankara has rejected Washington's account of what U.S. President Donald Trump said to his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan, denying there was any call by Trump to de-escalate the military operation against the Syrian Kurdish militia, the YPG, in Syria's Afrin enclave. The White House reported Trump said the Turkish operation risks undercutting our shared goals in Syria and urged Turkey to de-escalate, limit its military actions, and avoid civilian casualties and increases to displaced persons and refugees. The dispute over the contents of the telephone call is exacerbating a lack of trust between the two NATO allies. The United States has supported the YPG militia in the war against the Islamic State. Ankara considers the YPG a terrorist organization linked to a Kurdish insurgency inside Turkey. Thursday, Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim launched a verbal attack on Washington.
NATO'da bölgede yıllarca beraber çalıştığımız...
Yildirim said, "This country we call a NATO ally is in cahoots with terrorist organizations." He called it a grave and very painful situation, accusing the United States of working with terrorist organizations. He said Turkey will never accept this. The Prime Minister's latest comment is fueling expectations Ankara will carry out its threat to expand its operation against the Syrian Kurdish militia to Manbij. US forces are deployed in the Syrian town with the YPG militia. Ankara's lack of trust in Washington is now becoming a major obstacle to resolving the Syria crisis. Wednesday, Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu ruled out a proposal he said was made by US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to create a 30-kilometer security zone inside Syria to protect Turkey's southern border. Cavusoglu said, until trust is restored, no deal can be made. Ankara is at odds with Washington on issues besides Syria. Turkey is calling for the extradition of a US-based Turkish cleric, Fethullah Gulen, who Ankara blames for a failed coup in 2016. The cleric, who lives in self-imposed exile in Pennsylvania, denies the accusation. Meanwhile, US authorities are reportedly in the process of considering a massive fine against a Turkish state-owned lender, Halkbank, in connection with Iran's sanctions busting, following a conviction in New York of one of its senior executives. Erdogan has alleged the executive's conviction in the federal case is the latest attempt by the FBI and CIA to unseat him. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Fame rapper Eminem has just released a new single. In it, he joins forces with singer Ed Sheeran. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
We're going to be hearing a song, which is the second single off Eminem's ninth album. And the album is called Revival. He said back in 2016 that he was writing music for a new album, and here we are. The new album came out. It topped the UK charts when it was released at the end of 2017. It's doing okay, but it's met with kind of questionable reviews from the critics. But nonetheless, he's got an interesting collection of artists that he has recorded with for this new album. The first single that he put out was a song that he sang with Beyoncé. Eminem and Beyoncé, who would have ever thought? The song is called Walk on Water. And for today, we've got Ed Sheeran and Eminem, and this is called River. So let the
river run. He's coming home with his neck scratched to catch black. Sweat jackets and dress slacks mismatched on his breast jack. He's a sex addict and she just...
Well, yeah, Eminem, he's sort of been in the news and out of the news as much. You don't quite hear about him as much as you used to.
Well, he can afford to take some time off and step away, and that's what he's done, although sometimes that can backfire on an artist. But he's now decided to come back. It's been a couple of years since his last album was out. He is going to be headlining the Coachella Valley Music Festival in Palm Springs, California in April, along with Beyonce and The Weeknd. And of course, as I mentioned, Beyonce and Eminem recorded the first single on Eminem's new album, which is Revival. The song was called Walk on Water. Today, he chose to sing with Ed Sheeran. Ed is still on tour for his latest album, Divide. And big news for Ed Sheeran fans, the Sheerios. He announced just recently he got engaged to his longtime girlfriend, Cherry Seaborn. It was only natural because they've been sweethearts since school days. And so congratulations to Ed on that bit of good news. He'll be performing at the Grammys this weekend. He's nominated for two. Eminem, he credits Eminem for helping him overcome stuttering as a child.
Huh. Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, Ed Sheeran wow. said that he stuttered, and it was Eminem's rap music that helped him to work through that. And he said to record with him was one of the highlights of his career so far, which is kind of an honor for someone like Ed Sheeran to credit Eminem with that kind of an honor. Also, on the new album, by the way, as I was mentioning, some unique artists. Pink is on the new album. Skylar Grey is on the new album. He's got quite a collection of folks that you wouldn't normally associate with Eminem music, but Eminem did say that he wanted to mix it up a little bit. His next album, he's already talking about the next album, will be working with his original producer who discovered him back in about 2002, Dr. Dre. So Eminem's going back to his roots with Dr. Dre. So this is all interesting times. Eminem back on tour, doing some big major festivals this summer. And, of course, the ninth album is now out. It's called Revival.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
And I know she's using me to try to play him. I don't care. Hi, Suzanne. But I should have said bye, Suzanne, after the first night. But tonight I am.
I've been a liar, been a thief, been a lover, been a cheat. Oh, my sin.
The music of Eminem and Ed Sheeran, quite a combination. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States remains vigilant to prevent Iran from gaining any new ground in the Middle East. Speaking to the Israeli Knesset, Vice President Mike Pence said, "The United States will continue to work with Israel and with nations across the world to confront the leading state sponsor of terror, the Islamic Republic of Iran." The regime in Iran is a brutal dictatorship that seeks to dominate its citizens and deny them their most fundamental rights. History has proven those who dominate their own people rarely stop there, said Mr. Pence. And increasingly, we see Iran seeking to dominate the wider Arab world. The Iranian regime sows chaos across the region. Last year alone, even as its citizens cried out for help with basic necessities, Iran devoted more than $4 billion to malign activities in Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere across the region. It has supported terrorist groups that even now sit on Israel's doorstep. The U.S. is working to enact effective and lasting restraints on Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile programs, said Mr. Pence. Earlier this month, the president waived sanctions on Iran to give the Congress and our European allies time to pass stronger measures. But as President Trump made clear, this is the last time. The United States vowed, Vice President Pence, will never allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon. Beyond the nuclear deal, we will also no longer tolerate Iran's support of terrorism or its brutal attempts to suppress its own people. To the people of Iran, the U.S. has another message, declared Mr. Pence. We are your friends, and the day is coming when you will be free from the evil regime that suffocates your dreams and buries your hopes. And when your day of liberation finally comes, we say to the good people of Iran, the friendship between our peoples will blossom once again.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.